Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 29, Krishna and the Gopis Meet, Text number 33. Kuravanti hi trairatim kushala swatman. Cha priye pati sutadbi arti daikam. Tanna prasita parameshvara nashma chindhya. Asamdricham thai chirarara vindanitra. Kurvanti hi tvai ratim kushala svaratman. Vichapriye pati sutad bhir arti daikam. Tanna prasida parameshvara mahasva chinjha. Samdritam thai chiradara vindanitra. Kurvanti, they show. He, indeed, thai, for you. Ratim, attraction. Kushala, expert persons. Say for their own. Atman, self, with a big capital S. Nitya, eternally. Priye, who is dear. Pati, with our husbands. Sutta, children. Haribi, and other relations. Aratidai, who only give trouble. Kim, what? Tat, therefore. Naha, to us. Pasida, be merciful. Parama Ishvaraha, O Supreme Controller. Nasma Chinjaha, please do not cut down. Asam, our hopes. Dritam, sustained. Tvai, for you. Chirat, for a long time. Aravindanitta, a lotus-eyed one. Translation. Expert transcendentalists always direct their affection towards you because they recognize you as their true self and eternal beloved. What use do we have for these husbands, children and relatives of ours who simply give us trouble? Therefore, O Supreme Controller, grant us your mercy. O lotus-eyed one, please do not cut down our long-cherished hope to have your association. So there's no purport to this, but there's certainly lots of purport preceding this, so we can just add on to that. So here the gopis are speaking very, very deep and meaningful statements which take a lot of consideration, a lot of thought to penetrate even just into just a little understanding and to a little taste of the love that these gopis are having for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the reading Srimad Bhagavatam, we're not just trying to intellectually understand it, we're actually trying to taste transcendental mellows. So just a little background for this verse. The gopis, of course, have approached Krishna in the forest of Vrindavan. They've left their families, all their relatives, and practically there's not much hope of going back to them. They will be condemned. That is their thought. They do not care. So they've approached Krishna, who has, you know, played his flute with the particular melodies and particular notes that he knows will attract their hearts. So he has called them, and they have arrived there in the forest, you know, surrendering their very selves to Krishna. And Krishna begins to tell them all sorts of various religious principles why they should go back home. So that is the background to this verse. And the gopis, of course, are devastated, totally devastated by this course of events. You know, they're feeling that you know, they've been stabbed by a million swords, you know, burning up with a fever, pierced by thousands and thousands of spears. They're just totally devastated, and their minds are there are different groups of the gopis. Some of them are feeling ashamed that, you know, Krishna has rejected them, and yet they're still living, and they're thinking, what sort of, you know, what sort of love do we have for Krishna, that he has rejected us and we did not immediately give up our lives as useless. So some of them are feeling ashamed, some of them are feeling angry. Radharani, Srimati Radharani, feeling angry. Therefore, Sukadeva Goswami in previous verses explains that their voices were stammering with agitation. So Krishna has presented himself as very, very difficult to attain, and there are so many different levels that we can understand, we can learn from the love of the gopis and follow in their footsteps. Firstly, we can understand that although Krishna appears to be impossible or very, very difficult to attain, one should not give up the attempt. This is something that will affect all devotees during the course of their, you know, sojourn back to Godhead within the course of this lifetime. At some stage, some of us will think, without doubt, I think I'll give up. It's too hard to become a devotee. It's too hard to attain Krishna. I'm cashing my chips in. I'm hanging my beads up. So we can actually learn from the gopis that this is certainly not their mood. This is not the mood of one who actually has love. If someone is coming to Krishna perhaps for some, you know, doing some business, and perhaps they get what they want, they may then leave, or perhaps if they don't get what they want, they may leave. Either way. But if someone is trying to love God, then this is the example that the gopis are showing, that Yes, Krishna may appear to be very, very difficult, but we don't give up, because the acharyas explain that Krishna is like a jackfruit. The jackfruit on the outside is very prickly and rough, but inside there's a nectar, soft, sweet nectar. So Krishna is like that. The gopis know this. The gopis know Krishna very well. And they understand this. Krishna's, you know, we've seen that prickly side, Krishna. But they're going to keep going because they know Krishna has this very merciful, magnanimous, you know, he's unlimitedly merciful. Unlimitedly magnanimous. And they know that soft centre is there, soft, sweet centre. And so they're, you know, they're just going to push on. So, as we described last time, that Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura was explaining the three different purposes, and, you know, Krishna speaking very harshly to the gopis. One was that he wanted to reveal to the world their purity, you know, that their love is pure, spotless, unshakable. They're not there, you know, it is supreme. They're not there just for business. That it is so pure that even Krishna treats them harshly, it just stands the test of everything. Pure, strong, powerful, spotless, transcendental love. He wanted to reveal this to the world. So we just touched upon that. Krishna also wanted to, you know, taste, because this is about rasa, tasting, you know, the mellows of love. So there were some role reversals there, where Krishna took the contrary position, which is usually that taken by the gopis, and they were a little bewildered and weren't quite themselves. So he took the opportunity to increase the joy of meeting by just being a little bit playing hard to get, and also to taste that, you know, that position of playing hard to get. And he also wanted to, by these words, he wanted to hear the gopis break down all the barriers and hear their unconditional words of love. So actually, Kavikarna Purna explains there was another reason as well. There are probably others, but these are the few that I've read. But Kavikarna Purna explains that Krishna also wanted to unite all the gopis, because there are different parties. There's the party of Chandravali, sort of like competitor, opposition, and there's the party of Radharani. But Krishna, by this arrangement, he actually united them so that they could all taste rasa together without any impediments. Sometimes we see that, you know, to give a gross example, sometimes you see that governments will do this. They will, you know, in times where, you know, the people begin fighting amongst each other or what they want and what have you, they will declare war. And that people become united in war. Sometimes if there's some, you know, something that happens, you know, recently a couple of miners got caught in a mine. So, you know, they make a big thing, and everyone forgets all the differences, and they all unite together. Yes, let's, you know, rally around the mines. So, you know, in one sense, Krishna is doing this as well. He's just creating a situation which they all united equally on the same level of devastation. So this is the situation, the gopis, and of course the gopis are feeling you know, just as Krishna had these, he spoke with hidden words, hidden meanings. So there is one meaning and then there is a hidden meaning, in which case Krishna was at the same time, he was encouraging the gopis to stay with him, to enjoy loving pastimes, rasa dance, and at the same time he's discouraging them to taste, as we said, these various flavours of love. So when the gopis are speaking, there is also some hidden meanings. There is, you know, some very direct understandings that we can take, very powerful messages in these gopis. But behind the scenes, behind everything, you know, between the lines, what the gopis are saying is that, you know, we reject what you say, Krishna, as illogical and useless. Ultimately, that is, you know, underlying what the gopis are saying there. Because, you know, Krishna has called them into the forest purposely, playing his flute, and they have come there, and then he begins to talk to them about religious principles. So they're thinking, well, you're committing all sorts of sinful activities here, so you can keep your religious principles to yourself. You know, you've called us into the forest here, and now you're going to talk about religious principles. Besides that, if you reject us, you murder the lot of us. Millions and millions of gopis will all be dead in the forest at the one time, and you'll be responsible. And you'll be responsible for all their relatives suffering. So you'll be, you know, a murderer as well. So, this way they're, you know, underlying everything, they're rejecting Krishna's statements. And that, so, the gopis, they're, Kavikarna Purna, he describes it, they are comparing themselves like tatiki birds. So a tatiki bird, they only drink water from the clouds when it rains. If rain touches the ground, they won't touch it. It's a tatiki bird. So even if the cloud rains poison, they still won't drink elsewhere. And they're comparing themselves in that sense to like these tatiki birds. That even if Krishna, they come to Krishna and he speaks these harsh, poisonous words which are killing them, still they won't go anywhere else. They won't go back to their relatives. They only have shelter with Krishna. But the logic there is that just as a cloud is really a lifeless entity. Some clouds are not. But some are lifeless entities. And the cloud doesn't really care whether the tatiki bird dies or not, if it's raining poison. But here the gopis, they've been comparing Krishna to Narayan. You're not just a lifeless cloud. You're actually the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's natural for you to actually reciprocate with us. And this is underlying what the gopis are saying. Ultimately what they're getting at is that, you know, come on Krishna, reciprocate with us. That's what they're, you know, they're getting towards. So, you know, and they're trying to express that there's no fault in what we've done. We've left our relatives, yes. But, you know, Narayan doesn't see fault in his devotees when they surrender everything and becomes detached from all their relatives and everything in the material world, you know. So similarly, we have surrendered to you in love, you know, why should you see fault in us? It is a natural thing like this. So the gopis are expressing all these various different sentiments to refute Krishna's illogical, his statements as illogical, because they can do that. They're on a platform of pure love. Prema Bhakti has various stages. You know, there's Prema, there's Rati first, and there's Prema, there's Mana, and there's we've got Sneha, we have Raga, Anuraga, Bhava, Mahabhava. So on the various levels of prema, for instance, dasya-ras may go up to a certain level, and then, you know, sakya-ras goes up to a certain level. So, you know, anuraga is sort of tasted, in these conjugal relationships and not so much in the other relationships. So it's a level of prema which is, you know, more intense, different qualities. And one of the features of this anuraga is that the love is so intense that they cannot stand any logical arguments. They can't even tolerate to hear them. You know, on the platform of love, don't speak logic to us. That's what they're thinking. You know, don't even try it on us, Krishna, because, you know, we're talking about love here. You know, you keep your logical, you know, and your material considerations and your conceptions of Dharma. We don't really want to hear it. So there's so many different, moods expressions of love going on within the gopis on this very, very elevated platform. And they are saying to Krishna that, you know, on one hand they're rejecting what he's saying, but on the other hand, in this verse, they're all saying that even if we accept what we're saying, we're actually following that. So again, you're defeated. See, the gopis are always very expert. They know how to... They're actually on an equal platform with Krishna, because they are Krishna's own internal spiritual pleasure, energy. So they're on an equal platform. So sometimes Krishna defeats him, and sometimes they defeat Krishna. And they enjoy this love battle. A battle of love. So... they're saying that we are following the principles that you've enunciated, that we should render service to our husbands' relatives, look after our children. But these are religious principles. We are doing that. How are we doing that? They're saying that. Here they're backing up their argument with that of the example of great saintly personalities, that expert transcendentalists always direct their affection towards you because they recognize you as their true self and eternal beloved. So in this sense, they're making very profound statements. They're confirming Krishna's statements about what are correct religious principles. And they're going even a little further into the transcendental aspect of those religious principles, by explaining that by serving the supersoul who lives within the heart of the husband, within the heart of our wife, within the heart of our children, we are automatically serving all those relatives. Very philosophically, very high philosophical point. See, Vedic knowledge, there's the ordinary religious principles which are followed and accepted even if they're not so much understood. People may understood, yes, they keep society regulated and what have you, but there are higher, these principles also pushing one to higher transcendental truths. So, Vedic, this fact is actually confirmed by Lakshmi herself. In the Bharat Vash, this planetary system that we live on has, I think, seven different sections. And on each section there's a particular incarnation of the Lord who exists in a deity form, and there his great devotees, they worship that form. So in one place Hanuman and many different great devotees are worshipping Ram, another place Lord Nisringa is being worshipped. In one place Kamadev, who's an expansion of Prajumna, he's being worshipped by Lakshmi Devi and many other different devotees. And she actually offers prayers. This is found in the fifth canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. She offers these exact same prayers that you're the real husband. She's saying, you know, only foolish people under the material energy will accept, you know, husbands manifested by the material energy. That's not very intelligent. But actually, you are providing for everyone and you are protecting everyone. Therefore, every woman, and again, uses that same tense sense we explained last time, in the sense that all living entities are female in the sense that they're subordinate to Krishna, the Supreme Purushottama. So using that, every woman, every Paraprakriti, you know, who knows their true interest, they accept you as their husband because you are the only protector and the only provider. And that's what a husband's supposed to do. Factually, Krishna does that in his various, and also in his various incarnations. So this same statement is being confirmed by Lakshmi in her very eloquent, quite a set of prayers, for the six or eight prayers, which expand this same point very nicely. But, you know, it is quite a deep philosophy, and even though this is not really followed, even, you know, to some degree, even amongst devotees, you know. To a certain degree, it's there. You find in Indian culture, probably more so than many other places, there is this slight, you know, reminder of what Vedic culture was. Vedic culture is practically dead in India, but there's a slight reminder there. So therefore, you see how the women, they have that, you know, they take that Vedic stance as presented here. Now Prabhupada gives an interesting point on this, that he says that Vedic culture, whether dead or alive, is just as valuable. He says Vedic culture is so valuable that even when it's practically dead, it's still valuable. Yeah, like the elephant. And he gives the example. He gives the example that if you an elephant or a cow, whether dead or alive, they have the same value. They're still valuable. And, for instance, if we take the example of a cow, when a cow dies, in India, of course, they have the cobblers as their trade, the mukshi, because they deal with, you know, when a cow dies, they come, they take it away, and they use every part of it. They use the skin, they use the hooves, they use the horns, they even eat the meat. So, you know, it is all, every part, very, very valuable. And Vedic culture is like that, that even just, you know, dead or alive, you know, some trace of it is so very, very valuable in our lives. Whatever part we can follow to some degree properly will actually be very, very valuable. So, of course, those who properly understand Vedic culture, the Vedic culture is very, very difficult to understand. Even the ordinary, you know, material religious principles are very difficult to understand. And factually, it's only the Brahmanas who are allowed to study Vedic literature and teach Vedic literature. And again, Prabhupada explains that's not a monopoly. That's not a ploy so that there's a monopolisation on Vedic knowledge. What it means is that you have to have a certain qualification to understand it, otherwise you just cannot understand it. And the minimum level to understand Vedic knowledge is come to the level of the mode of goodness, Brahminical platform. As long as someone is in the modes of passion and ignorance, that means they're affected by lust and anger, they cannot properly understand Vedic knowledge. Therefore, Brahminical platform is a platform of understanding. They can study, they can teach Vedic knowledge. And above this, So they're considered perfect, you know, in that sense that they've risen above the lower modes of nature. That's one stage of perfection. Now Krishna says that of many, many persons who are endeavouring for perfection, hardly one knows me in truth. So even of many, many brahmanas who are studying the Vedas, hardly any of those factually can understand the essence of all Vedic knowledge, and that is that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because Krishna is, you know, he is unlimited. His glories are unlimited, very, very, and his glories are inconceivable. It is almost, you know, it is not possible to just fully conceive of Krishna's glories. And the only way that you can enter into the understanding of Krishna, which is the essence of Vedic knowledge, is through Bhakti Yoga. Bhakti Yoga is the access towards understanding Krishna. Then, without Krishna's mercy, no one can understand Krishna. And when Krishna's mercy is there, then we can understand. And that mercy, you know, Krishna reveals himself when one engages in Bhakti Yoga. Again, Prabhupada gives an example that sometimes when you go to meet a very, very important person and you have to wait for an appointment. So you may be sitting there for hours waiting. You cannot go in until he allows you, because he's a very important person. And yet, sometimes while you're sitting there, you'll see that, you know, an ordinary orderly, who may not even have the same important position as you, is going in and out of the office, seeing that person you want to see without any problems at all. Because they have access. They're doing some service and they have free access, even though they may not be some big, big person like that. So Krishna, seeing Krishna is like that. Bhakti Yoga is like that. When you connect with Krishna with this Bhakti Yoga, then you have access into this understanding of Krishna consciousness. So, and even understanding Krishna, even amongst Vaishnavas, the greatest mystery in understanding Krishna is these pastimes between the gopis and Krishna. That is the greatest mystery even for Vaishnavas. There are many Vaishnavas in other various sampradayas who actually don't understand, you know, this pastimes of Radha Krishna. Some even reject them. They cannot understand. Krishna is very, very difficult to understand, and these pastimes with the gopis are very, very... the only way, and through bhakti, you can begin to understand Krishna, but to start to enter into these pastimes with Krishna and the gopis, actually the qualification is you've got to get to the little higher stages of bhakti, and to enter into that spontaneous, pure, loving, ecstatic mood chanting. You chant Hare Krishna in that pure, loving, ecstatic mood, then you begin to taste these very, very deep, you know, ocean of loving pastimes. We can get someone that, you know, by whatever little bhakti we have, we can have some entrance. And as that bhakti increases, we get more appreciation. Just like one, you know, has the ability, you know, each bird, they fly in the sky, some can fly higher than others, some fly on this level, some fly higher. So according to our bhakti, you know, as we reach these different levels of bhakti, we can have more and more understanding and taste of these very, very wonderful. Otherwise, there's no access. It cannot be accessed through karma yoga, it cannot be accessed through jnana yoga, it cannot be accessed by astanga yoga. And according to Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura, these pastimes cannot be tasted or relished even by Vedi bhakti. Very, very elevated. Krishna's glories are so unlimited, very, very, even from the beginning, Krishna is called Trayadish. Trayadish, he's the Lord of Threes. There are in many different ways. Krishna is the Lord of threes. He's the Lord of threes. That there are three different worlds. Below Goloka Vrindavan, there are three worlds. There is Haridam, which is the abode of Vaikuntha. And these pastimes of Krishna, in the abode of Vaikuntha, Krishna exists there in his many different Narayan forms, each with a different name. There he manifests, each of those planets. It's described that one planet is 8 miles times 100, times 1,000, times 10,000, times 100,000, times 1,000,000, times 10,000,000, times 100,000,000. That's one planet. There are unlimited Vaikuntha planets. And unlimited, you know, all these different incarnations. This is Krishna's. It's explained that they're like each Krishna enjoys there in his various expansions, just like someone may have many different rooms in a treasure house. Each room is unlimited, opulent, you know, enjoyable experience. So that is Haridam. So and the, below that is Maheshdam, the abode of Lord Shiva. Also the Brahma Jyoti. For those who transcend material existence but are not Krishna conscious, they take that intermediate position, Nirvana. Cessation of material existence but not entering into spiritual life. And below Maheshdam is Devidam, this material world, material existence, which in itself is quite unlimited. So now these are the three different planetary systems, and Krishna is the Lord of all of them. In fact, when Brahma, you know, stole Krishna's cows and calves, Krishna manifested to Brahma all these unlimited Vaikuntha planets and, you know, so many different forms in Narayan, and each one being worshipped by so many different demigods and Brahmas in so many universes. Within 1 second, Krishna manifested, you know, this vast panorama of spiritual and material worlds within a second. This Krishna's glory is just so difficult to understand. Who can do that? We can barely manifest anything within a second, you know. So, in this way is called Tridish. Now, Krishna is also called Tridish because he also manifests as the three Purusha avatars who manage the material worlds. And he also manifests as the three Guna avatars who manage the modes of goodness, passion and ignorance. So even just understanding that, how Krishna is manifested as, you know, Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu in order to manage the three modes of material nature, that is very difficult to understand. What to speak of him being the three different Purusha avatars, what to speak of managing all the three worlds, spiritual and material and everything in between. And even more confidential understanding of that Tridish is that Krishna has three different natures. So his eternal form as Krishna manifests in three abodes, in Mathura, in Dwarka Mathura, and Vrindavan, Goloka Vrindavan. So on the planet of Goloka Vrindavan, which is above even Haridam, above the Vaikuntha Lokas, is this Krishna Loka, which is, you know, more vast than all the others put together, and that has three divisions. And Krishna manifests himself, only there is Krishna actually manifest, and here in the material world when he brings a replica of the spiritual world to this material world. So his form, his two-handed form, is actually manifested by Yoga Maya. So So Yogamaya does not act even in Haridam. It does not act in Vaikuntha Loka, Yogamaya. Nor in the Heshdam, nor in the Brahmajyoti. Only acts in the... So these pastimes, when Yogamaya manifests the eternal form of Krishna, and these wonderful pastimes with the gopis, those pastimes are so exalted beyond anything that anyone can conceive of or imagine, even in the spiritual world. Even Lord Narayan and Lakshmi in the Vaikuntha Lokas are amazed by these pastimes between Krishna, amazed and attracted by these wonderful pastimes between Krishna and the gopis. So it's no wonder that, you know, we may not fully understand them. You know, when you consider, you know, we enter into the tiniest little, you know, we just get a tiny little foothold into understanding something, but really, these pastimes are so deep and unfathomable and inconceivable that they amaze even Krishna himself in Goloka Vrindavan. So, for us to have the opportunity to hear these wonderful, you know, transcendental words spoken by Krishna's internal Ladini potency in the form personified as Srimati Radharani and all the various gopis, we can learn so much, but they're very, very deep and cannot be understood just by a casual understanding. You know, in order to enter into these, devotees have to become serious devotees. You know, they have to chant very nicely and purely. They have to follow regulative principles. You know, they have to engage in devotional service in a very steady way to purify all the material contamination from their minds in order to be able to concentrate and slowly enter into these pastimes. One cannot just pick up a book and, oh yes, let me read about the goat. Oh yeah, I've read that. Been here, done that. You know, it takes a lifetimes, you know, to gradually begin to taste these very, very exalted pastimes. And even if we're spoken by these gopis, we can learn so much on so many different levels. So, that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who even Narayan, Lord Narayan and Lakshmi, you know, astounded and attracted by. How fortunate are the gopis that Krishna is their, you know, very intimate lover. He is bestowing upon these gopis mercy that is not seen anywhere in all the spiritual and material world. So how fortunate they are, like that. And how exalted they are. Only a fool would, you know, consider imitating, you know, or imagining that they have attained some artificial platform as one of the gopis. A very, very exalted platform. So, here, please, one may ask, and I can hear you asking, that how is it they're addressing Lord Krishna as Paramatma? They call him here as Parameshvara, O Supreme Controller. And again, it's explained by our acharyas that generally, just to quickly go over it, generally when in the very elevated platform of prema bhakti, pure love of God, when there is a very powerful mood of separation, that prema bhakti in the mood of separation reveals Krishna's sweet characteristics, Madhurya, and also his qualities. That is one of the features of tense separation. It reveals all of Krishna's sweet characteristics and his opulent characteristics. When a devotee on the platform of prema bhakti is in union or, you know, in associating directly with Krishna, it covers that association. Krishna's beauty is so sweet that it actually covers over the opulent sort of features of his characteristics. Now, if a devotee They have prema bhakti, but they're in association with Krishna, and they're perceiving his opulent characteristics. It's considered that their love is a little shrunken. It's not fully developed. It shouldn't happen. When their love is, you know, not in that state, then they'll be in the association of Krishna, and those opulent qualities will be just completely covered by the sweet qualities of Krishna. But here, the gopis, they're in the association of Krishna, and they're actually perceiving. They're describing Krishna as Parameshvara. So, Śrīla Vinaya Chakravarti Kaur is explaining that although they are in his presence, they are experiencing, their love is so elevated that they're experiencing separation, even in his presence. And therefore, that is revealing both the sweet characteristics of Krishna and the opposite of Krishna. So it is actually a test in of the very exalted platform of the love that the gopis have for Krishna. So, therefore, they are saying that expert transcendentalists always direct their affection towards you because they recognize you as their true self and eternal beloved. Like that. So they're actually speaking to Krishna as though he is the paramatma feature. And therefore they're saying, what use do we have for these husbands, children and relatives of ours who simply give us trouble? So, I can't help laugh every time I hear that. I'm not going to go into that too much. But, you know, we can understand generally that in the material world our relationships are temporary, and the gopis are saying, what need do we have for this temporary, conditional love of relatives manifested by the material energy, because we're interested in eternal relationship and unconditional love. So that's basically what they're saying. What do we have need for this inferior? And that is had when that relationship is established with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore they're saying, therefore, O Supreme Controller, grant us your mercy. O Lotus-Eyed One, please do not cut down our long-cherished hope to have your association. So they're saying here, Aravinda Nisha, Lotus-Eyed One. So in calling Krishna Lotus-Eyed One, they're intimating that, and it describes also that Chirat, the word Chirat, for a long time, see? So their hopes of, developing this loving relationship have been there for a long time, they're saying. So they're saying, ever since we first saw your beautiful eyes, you know, way, way back we saw those beautiful lotus eyes, and as soon as we saw them, from the first time we saw them, way, way back, you know, the seed of love entered into our hearts. The seed of love, bhava, entered into our hearts by your glance and was sown into our hearts. Like that. And then that became a creeper of bhava, of bhakti yoga, which is now born these beautiful fruits of love of God, which are there for you to enjoy, Krishna. So how could you cut down this creeper? You have nurtured it. You planted the seed yourself. You have nurtured it the whole time, and now here is this beautiful tree for the fruits of love of God. You know it's wrong, and we know it's wrong, so you cannot do it like that. So this is the statement of the gopis here. So does anyone have any questions or comments about any of that? Yes? Yes, the love of the gopis is unconditional, untouched by any material qualities, is completely transcendental, And particularly the love of the gopis is the it manifests the in the love of the gopis all qualities of all other various types of love are fully manifest. In other words, my relationship to Krishna as a servant, as a friend, neutral or even parental, all those different types of characteristics which are present in those types of love are also in the love of the gopis, in their love, with extra qualities that are not found in those. So it's comparatively, it is superlative. And Lord Trivikram is the form of the Lord. Well, actually Munichari worships Lord Trivikram. He's probably more qualified to speak. No, please. Say a little bit about Lord Trivikram. Do you understand that point? Yep.
So the offerings he made to all of the deities on the altar, we see the three plates going on, the six or seven pajamas on every day. It actually is the treasure come who's, if you like, receiving all of the worship. For several reasons, but one is that because we decide I'm sure it's very easy to offer everything to him, so he's the one somebody that shows every day and sees the other items.
And Lord Trivikram is the incarnation of the Lord who took three steps, three very enormous steps that covered the lower planetary systems, the middle and the higher, and his foot actually pierced through the covering of the universe, and then, you know, the little trickle of the Karen Ocean, I think. Karen Ocean. Trickled down through and came down. Yeah. Any other questions or comments?